If you care about animals or crops, you probably care how the weather could impact both.
It's summer.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. A tense morning for American soccer fans as the U.S. women's national team is into penalty kicks with Sweden after 120 scoreless minutes in their round of 16 match at the World Cup in Australia. In the U.S., the special counsel in the January 6th case asked a federal judge for a protective order limiting what former President Trump can reveal about the case. He was talking about the special counsel, Jack Smith, in South Carolina last night.
Somebody said, why don't you be nice to him? I said, yeah, wouldn't matter. Wouldn't matter. This guy's a maniac.
There is a 5 p.m. Monday deadline for the Trump team to respond to that request. An investigation is underway in Washington, D.C. after at least six people were killed in multiple shootings. There were at least three incidents. Authorities are asking people to come forward with any information. Ceremonies are underway in Japan, marking 78 years since the atomic bombing in Hiroshima. This is ABC News. In Portugal, celebrations as World Youth Day. A large Catholic youth festival came to an end. Pope Francis celebrated Mass and announced that the next World Youth Day in 2027 will be held in Seoul, South Korea. The events first returned to Asia since the 1990s. Major change for women who suffer from depression after childbirth.
The FDA approving the first ever pill to treat severe depression after childbirth, known as postpartum depression. ABC News contributor Dr. Darian Sutton says the new drug has shown to reduce symptoms of depression within days, but there are also some possible side effects.
The most common symptoms appear to be sleepiness or drowsiness, which is why they say don't take this medication, for example, before you drive or operate heavy machinery. And one of the limitations in this study was that they did not study mothers who were breastfeeding. So that's still to be said.
Health experts say talk to your doctor about the newly approved FDA drug. Michelle Franz in ABC News.
This is ABC News.
Flowers, vegetables, and crab apples, some of the first Marathon County Fair attractions, and showed us proof those crops could grow there. Started in 1868 by the Agricultural Society, the Wisconsin Valley Fair in Wausau began as a place to buy and sell those types of goods. Today, it's considered one of the best in the state, featuring displays, demos, and big-name entertainment included with the price of your ticket. The Wisconsin Valley Fair runs August 1st to the 6th in Wausau. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup.
Woo-hoo!
Starting at 6 AM, The Mayor and Mino. Then at 8, The Earl Ingram Show. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show.
On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Wisconsin has the largest and longest-running youth apprenticeship program in America. Now, it's being recognized as one of the best. Mike Moan reports.
This summer, the Urban Institute issued a policy brief about the history and reach of the state's apprenticeship program for high school-age students. The authors say Wisconsin has adopted a well-structured, low-cost system with state support that allows for plenty of local control. The Institute's Robert Lerman helped compile the findings and says the Badger State's approach really gets to the heart of blending academics with on-the-job training.
They have part of the day or part of the week. They're at their workplace. But the whole point is that the workplace is a learning center for them.
Lerman says that's especially important for high school students worried about the cost of college. The Institute says another highlight of Wisconsin's program is that it has statewide curriculum skill standards, meaning an apprentice's credentials can be portable. Researchers say a weak spot is limitations for youth to move on to registered apprentice systems that offer extended training. Lerman suggests if more states beef up their programs as Wisconsin has,
we can improve equity and improve opportunity and efficiency and productivity for the country.
He adds his research has found that in general, U.S. apprenticeship programs lag behind many other countries in terms of their scope. Meanwhile, Wisconsin's program for youth has seen strong demand, including this past school year, with more than 5,700 employers providing apprenticeships to nearly 8,300 students. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
And you're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
She's the newest of seven elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a longtime tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
Most of us are not just red or blue. We're kind of purple. We want to do what's right while protecting our individual freedoms.
Join the Rational Revolution with host Chris Elfheim and Emily Cephos Thursday evenings from 7 to 8 on WGBW, WISS, and the Civic Media app.
Frosted Pencils, fully leaded education talk on Devil Radio 92.7. Now, here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci. Educated educators talking education.
Oh, welcome back Tuesday night. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Every Tuesday, we've had some great shows, you know, over this whole summer, Johnny. Maybe people said, you know, you're a little out of your wheelhouse, you know, student loans. But the reality is like, no, you know, we're talking about education. It's such a broad topic. But today, though, you know, kind of like to back to at least mine and your roots, our guest, though, is going to help us. But teaching and learning, particularly within the social studies, largely around history, talking about, you know, democracy. If, you know, if this already strikes it for you, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can give us a call, but, you know, we're going to jump into it, Johnny. There's been a lot about, in fact, teaching social studies. I know everybody's worried about STEM, And I'll put it out there again. It's like, you know what? Look, the math, all that stuff, great. But if you don't really get the understanding of history, social studies, the understanding of what it means to be an active participant, to be empowered to do the work of democracy, then education is worthless without that type of an education. And in fact, we see in state after state after state an assault on the ability to teach the way I just said, from the sense of saying instilling, and I know the freedom lovers are out there are going to go like, no, Tim, that's you who we're worried about. No. It's you're worrying me, dude, because I want to instill democratic values. Johnny, quote, see if you can put this quote. We have it in our power to begin the world over again. Johnny Lupinacci.
What makes me really excited about our guest tonight, who, you know, not only knows where that quote comes from, but knows a whole lot more about the person who shared those words.
Yeah.
And all the different ways that, you know, this historical figure has shaped not only politics, but democratic life in this country and around the world, quite frankly. So we're excited anytime that we can learn from historians and from history. And as teachers, we can learn that when we talk about teaching multiple perspectives, we talk about really digging deeply into, you know, the expertise that we talk about when we teach science, teach, you know, scientific consensus, same thing with history, learn about historical consensus, go deep on important figures, and teachers be inspired and teach. And so tonight we're lucky to have a really special guest, Tim.
Our guest is Harvey Kaye. He's a professor emeritus of democracy and justice studies and the director of Center for History and Social Change at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, I'll have to ask, we'll throw the question to you. We have it in our power to begin the world over again. Who said that?
My lifelong hero, Thomas Paine.
Ah, there it is. And
No pain, no gain.
I truly, right? Put it there. Okay, Harvey, we're gonna try to do, first of all, check out Harvey's book, Thomas Paine and the Promise of America, to really dig deep and say, oh my God, I forgot about this. Holy crap, just make sure you get out there, Thomas Paine and the Promise of America. So there, Harvey, we'll keep pitching your book throughout this. That quote, though, I want to start with that quote. We have it in our power to begin the world over again. And I'm using this, too, because I said, you know, we're not going to just dig into a biography of Thomas Paine here. We're talking about, you know, this critical time where the teaching of history is truly under assault. And this goes back to when you wrote the book in 2005, though. You used this quote to open the book more to set the stage of a troubling kind of the person who used this quote at the time. And I think as you get through the book, there's a pretty strong sense of you going, and that was, and I'm going to be nice on the radio, that was absolutely inappropriate for this person to use that quote. Who said that and who used that quote in your book?
So here it is. It's 1980, the Republican National Convention, and Ronald Reagan has been nominated for the presidency of the United States. In his acceptance speech at that convention, he had the audacity, and I mean audacity, to quote three figures from American history. One, the revolutionary Thomas Paine. Two, Abraham Lincoln. And three, Franklin Roosevelt. Now, I can tell you that the figure who really, really, really was shocking that he used, I mean, Roosevelt was bad enough in most of the Republicans' minds, but the one most outrageous one was Thomas Paine. Mm-hmm. People say, why Thomas Paine? Well, for 200 years, ever since the time of the American Revolution and the French Revolution, the age of revolution, you know, from 1775 right through to about 1800, ever since then, for 200 years, conservatives, whether they were political conservatives, business conservatives, religious conservatives, right? The way I like to put it is the powerful, the prestigious, and the pompous. They did everything they could to either suppress the memory of Thomas Paine or to basically lambaste and, as C word that you used before, crap all over Thomas Paine's life and legacy. Mm-hmm. But that year, 1980, Ronald Reagan, of all people, harnessed not just words of Thomas Paine. Everyone knows the line. We have it in our, everyone knows the line about these are the times that try men's souls.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Everyone does. But what Reagan did is he reached into common sense and he grabbed the most, I'd argue, the most revolutionary words in modern history. We have it in our power to begin the world over again. Well, he so shocked some figures. George Will asked the question, it is great in many ways.
Yeah.
Columnist with the Washington Post, he actually wrote a column. He said, what kind of conservative quotes Thomas Paine? He's supposed to be quoting Edmund Burke, right, the English philosopher and conservative political figure. So it really was startling. But what it was is that, let's not forget, first of all, Reagan had started out as a Roosevelt Democrat back in the 1930s and into the 1940s. And in fact, I mean, he was decidedly a liberal, if not a progressive, in those days. It's only in the course of the 1950s, and especially the 1960s, that he moved in some ways radically right, dramatically to the right, okay, and went after... You know, so he gave a speech for Barry Goldwater in 1964, which basically propelled himself into the political limelight. And in that speech, it's basically he's going after Social Security and a whole host of liberal things emanating from the Roosevelt years. The point is that Thomas Paine had been the hero ever since the Revolution of every liberal, progressive, and radical movement in America, right through the 19th century and the 20th century. And here was Reagan literally hijacking, or if you like, poaching that radical progressive figure.
Well, you put it there, and I'm going to throw this word out there. It's a co-opting, right? I mean, yeah, it's a co-opting.
Yes.
And so you put the co-opting out there and say, okay, like we have it in our power to begin the world over again. And I just think about this now too, back to teachers and stuff, the co-opting of so many of these people. And to me, right, you know, the people who use Martin Luther King to make an argument against affirmative action by, quote, citing the I Have a Dream speech as if, again, the whole idea of the letter from a Birmingham jail was never written, and then trying, you know, trying to just pick out, like, here's a great word that makes my point. And so this, we have it in our power to begin the world over again. You know what? Great quote. And he meant it, didn't he? But he didn't mean it the way Thomas Paine meant it at that time. He really meant, I'm going to take this sentence, I'm going to change the world, I'm actually going to rewrite history, and we're going to build the world over again from this conservative bastion. And here we are now, 2023. And the reality is that we're actually outlawing across this country, teaching history that makes people uncomfortable. Harvey, comment.
Well, I can only tell, I got to tell you this. Last week, the No Labels group, the group organized by a host of anonymous billionaires, they put together a 72-page document called, which they called Common Sense. And they actually said that this document was inspired by Thomas Paine's revolutionary call at the very beginnings of the revolution. In fact, the revolutionary document itself, Common Sense, they once again hijacked Thomas Paine and his revolutionary pamphlet for decidedly anti-Thomas Paine motives. They did not intend to stimulate political action that would extend and deepen democracy. They were looking, as the anonymous billionaires that they are, basically to, if you like, advance the candidacy of someone like Joe Manchin, who has been the foremost obstructor to progressive, to the extension of democracy, really, these last couple of years. And by the way, I'll give you another shocker, perhaps. Not too many years ago, Glenn Beck, the ultra-right-wing radio host, issued a book. It was in 2009. The year, the anniversary of 200th anniversary of Thomas Paine's passing, and he called it Common Sense, you know, channeled by Glenn Beck from Thomas Paine. And I can tell you, every single chapter was literally the upside down of Thomas Paine. He took Paine and turned him inside out. That's what they do because Paine scares them.
Well, and is that too, you know, we're coming up. I know, Mark, from the SAC, we got you on the line. We're going to hold you back. We're going to hold you over till the break. We'll get your call and you back. We're talking to Harvey Kaye, Professor Emeritus of Democracy Justice. We're talking about Thomas Paine. It's Busted Pencils. We got a lot going on here. But, you know, you put that in there. It's like, turning upside down Glenn Beck, the idea of turning this, you know, it's the co-opting again. And and you think about to take somebody. Now, I'm going to pose this question. Harvey, now, you've excited me. I'm reading it again. Go out and read the book. If I want to teach Thomas Paine as a radical, the radical that he was, won't I get in trouble if I'm a teacher, though, if I actually teach Thomas Paine and don't use the co-opting? Busted Pencils, fully leaded. When we come back, Mark from the SAC, Busted Pencils. See you in a break.
Flowers, vegetables, and crab apples, some of the first Marathon County Fair attractions, and showed us proof those crops could grow there. Started in 1868 by the Agricultural Society, the Wisconsin Valley Fair in Wausau began as a place to buy and sell those types of goods. Today, it's considered one of the best in the state, featuring displays, demos, and big-name entertainment included with the price of your ticket. The Wisconsin Valley Fair runs August 1st to the 6th in Wausau. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup. Starting at 6 a.m., the Mayor and Mino. Then at 8, the Earl Ingram Show. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, the Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, the Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crew. And 6 to 7, the Maggie Dawn Show.
On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
She's the newest of 7 elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a long-time tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr. Flowers, vegetables, and crab apples, some of the first Marathon County Fair attractions, and showed us proof those crops could grow there. Started in 1868 by the Agricultural Society, the Wisconsin Valley Fair in Wausau began as a place to buy and sell those types of goods. Today, it's considered one of the best in the state, featuring displays, demos, and big-name entertainment included with the price of your ticket. The Wisconsin Valley Fair runs August 1st to the 6th in Wausau. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
Right through the undertow. That's what we do every Tuesday. We pull you through that undertow. Oh, that's what I do. It's a struggle. Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators, talking education. Our guest, Professor Emeritus Harvey Kay, talking about Thomas Paine and the promise of America, the co-opting of Paine's message. Radical. We got a caller. I left with a question. Mark from the SAC. Let's get right to you, though. You gave us a call, Mark. We appreciate the call. Mark, what's happening?
Yeah, thanks so much. And I've heard Harvey before, and that I've tried calling him before to bring up Agrarian Justice by Thomas Paine, where he kind of justifies what now would be the estate tax to fund an old age pension system and guaranteed dividend sums to be paid out to all citizens reaching maturity, each at the age of like 21, I guess. That it is more to it than that. But I mean, that I think that currently that if you tried teaching agrarian justice in school today, there'd be a lot of conservatives that would flip out over it, including that if you tried teaching what Madison's notes on the Constitutional Convention, where he gave an unvarnished opinions of all sorts of folks back then, including one Gouverneur Morris, which applies today, where he talked about how bad slavery was, tearing people away from Africa, from their beloved families, and shipping them to hard bondage here in the United States. I mean, it just is, it's just something that the conservatives now seem to just hate history. They hate actually the progressive movement that has existed in our republic since its inception, to some extent. I mean, even though we've fallen back on some things, but I mean that there was ideas back in the time of the founding that would justify
It sounds to me like you've read that book. Before I get to the question, Harvey, a little comment for Mark from the SAC.
Yeah, let's talk about the irony of everything, okay? The first irony is that Gouverneur Morris, who you cite, hated Thomas Paine, went out of his way in the 1790s to leave Thomas Paine in a French prison because he so despised him and was hoping he'd pass away in that prison, which he almost did because they almost executed him. It was a miracle that he survived the night. Okay. But yes, Agrarian Justice, the last of his great pamphlets, was actually an argument and remains a great argument for two things. Number one, granting young people monies when they reach maturity in order to give them a start in life. And two, it's a call for what we now have as Social Security. Paine is the godfather of Social Security. If you go to the U.S. Social Security Administration website, unless the Trump administration took his name off of it, I can tell you, you will find he is considered the founding father of the idea of Social Security.
And with that, then, I'm going to come back to the question we left with the break. Harvey, so the patriot, the radical, can I teach Thomas Paine? So the history teachers out there, the social studies teachers, the any classroom teacher that's out there right now is saying, I don't know what to teach. I'm afraid. But I'm saying, you know, Thomas Paine, you know, right now has been co-opted by conservatives. But if I teach the radical, can I do that?
Well, think this for a start. What did Thomas Paine do in Common Sense? First, by way of Common Sense, he turned what was merely a colonial rebellion, a rebellion to renegotiate the imperial contract between the American colonies and the British Empire. It was not a rebellion for independence. The Americans, up until 1776, when Paine issued Common Sense, believed that the battles they were fighting had to do with restructuring the empire, not with independence for the American colonies. In fact, in January of 76, when Washington was in the field with his army, when he had dinner with his officers, the first thing he did was toast the king. That shows you, even as he was toasting the king, Paine's Common Sense appears. Within weeks, it sells out the first printing, and within a couple of months, colonists north and south meet in town councils and in committees, and they're petitioning Congress to declare American independence. So it turns the colonial rebellion into a war for independence. Second, it was a call not merely for independence, but a call for the making of a democratic republic, which, by the way, Gouverneur Morris and a lot of the other founders were very much afraid of. They were happy enough, well, yeah, we'll have a republic, but a democratic republic? They weren't too keen on that, but Paine appealed to working people, whether they were artisans or laborers or farmers. Those are the folks who responded to Paine. The third thing was Paine actually made an argument for what we would think of today as American exceptionalism, not in the sense that America was better than everywhere else, but rather that it was historically positioned, as he says, to begin the world over again by making their rebellion, turning their rebellion into a revolution. The other really radical element, by the way, in Common Sense that I have to mention, and this goes right along with the First Amendment, it is the origins, really, of the First Amendment, was this. Paine said that there ought to be a constitution. He called it a charter, which would guarantee freedom of religion. In fact, he said, it should state that government should have no place in religion other than to make sure everyone gets to practice it as they please. Because when he came to Philadelphia in 1775, he was amazed at the religious diversity. I mean, truly the religious diversity of that city. And he was marveling at how they could get along and carry on life and even gather around the idea of staging a rebellion, possibly a revolution. So Paine argues radical stuff, and the Americans responded. That's where you begin to teach Paine's radicalism.
And that's what I want to do. And I'm thinking about that, Johnny. I know you're like, everybody who's listening can't see us nodding and shaking. We're like, oh my God, it's there. You're thinking about this. You know, we're coming up on again the next break here. The number is 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. We are talking with Emeritus Professor of Democracy and Justice, Harvey Kay, talking about Thomas Paine, his book, Thomas Paine and the Promise of America. Check out the book, Radical. I wonder, though, too, Harvey, and we're not going to have a chance to dig this yet as we move in, but as we go through, were people afraid of Paine's working class background, the fact that he was empowering common people? Busted Pencils, more when we get back.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct on WGBW.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. A tense morning for American soccer fans as the U.S. women's national team is into penalty kicks with Sweden after 120 scoreless minutes in their round of 16 match at the World Cup in Australia. In the U.S., the special counsel in the January 6th case asked a federal judge for a protective order limiting what former President Trump can reveal about the case. He was talking about the special counsel, Jack Smith, in South Carolina last night.
Somebody said, why don't you be nice to him? I said, yeah, wouldn't matter. Wouldn't matter. This guy's a maniac.
There is a 5 p.m. Monday deadline for the Trump team to respond to that request. An investigation is underway in Washington, D.C. after at least six people were killed in multiple shootings. There were at least three incidents. Authorities are asking people to come forward with any information. Ceremonies are underway in Japan, marking 78 years since the atomic bombing in Hiroshima. This is ABC News.
It doesn't hurt, feels good to help. And when you give blood, you provide a life-saving difference for others. The need doesn't take a summer break. So we have a challenge for you, started by Civic Media's Earl Ingram.
Congratulations to all those people and all of you who donate blood.
Take a selfie while giving blood, then post it along with hashtag CivicPints. Give blood and you could get a prize, too. Find challenge details and a donation center near you at civicmedia.us/giveblood. civicmedia.us/giveblood.
It's summertime in Wisconsin, and whatever the weather, it will impact you and your plans.
Should I water the garden? Will our event be rained out? Count on your local Civic Media radio station for in-depth details and the most up-to-date forecast.
Temperatures are rising into the mid and upper 70s under sunny skies.
It's your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup.
Woo-hoo!
Starting at 6 AM, the Mayor and Mino. Then at 8, the Earl Ingram Show. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, the Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, the Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And 6 to 7, the Maggie Dawn Show.
On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
She's the newest of seven elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a long-time tradition, which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Ball. Flowers, vegetables, and crab apples, some of the first Marathon County Fair attractions, and showed us proof those crops could grow there. Started in 1868 by the Agricultural Society, the Wisconsin Valley Fair in Wausau began as a place to buy and sell those types of goods. Today, it's considered one of the best in the state, featuring displays, demos, and big-name entertainment included with the price of your ticket. The Wisconsin Valley Fair runs August 1st to the 6th in Wausau. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Ball.
The Todd Alba Show.
Trigby Olson, senior advisor to the project, Lincoln Project, that is, that this is authoritarianism and the early, as Matt Flynn likes to say, the little cat's feet of fascism creeping in.
And the next time I see Scott Walker tweeting about Ronald Reagan taught us, there's never been a bigger bunch of balderdash ever perpetrated on people.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Seems every station on the TV is selling something no one can be. If every page was torn from the magazine.
We do not sell anything you can't be on Busted Pencils. It's all you can be. Radical Thomas Paine, Harvey K., our guest, Busted Pencils, Educated Educators Talking Education. The number is 844-967-2789. I mean, the depth that we can do with this, Johnny, it's just we don't have enough time. We've been talking to Harvey, though. We're going to actually produce the long format podcast. So if you're digging the show tonight, be prepared because by next week, we're going to meet with Harvey and just have we're just going to talk this all the way through. But Harvey, I left the last segment there with this idea of, so Thomas Paine, you know, is it a thing about, like, he empowers people. He's got a, at least for me, like if I put him in today's context, more of a middle class background where he's not an aristocrat. He's not a made man. He's not part of that even then. And so for me, you know, growing up in Homestead right outside of Pittsburgh, blue collar working class, feeling like that, like he speaks to me in that way where I don't feel like, and I say I like some of the founding fathers and some of the things in Jefferson and all those guys, but Paine resonates with me because he doesn't make me feel like he's, you know, he makes me feel like he knows what I'm talking about. He makes me feel like he understands, and he makes me feel like I can do something about the conditions that we're in. Is that the fear that conservatives have of actually, if we put Thomas Paine truly back in the curriculum?
That was what motivated their antagonism, as I said, for 200 years. But when Reagan grabbed hold of Paine, by the way, conservatives after Reagan have done everything they can to lay claim to Paine, but not, they've never used, they don't use, we have it in our power to begin the world over again. What they use are his early arguments in Common Sense, where he attacks the idea of monarchy, monarchical government. And they grab hold of it because they say it's his attack on all government,
right?
Which is not the case. Now, it's very interesting how from the very beginning, the patriot elite even were not so sure that this was a voice they were so keen on embracing. I'll call it a cute story, but it's a significant story. Everyone knows part of it. They don't know the full story. So Common Sense appears in mid-January in Philadelphia, and immediately is starting to be, it's just like spreading all over the country. It was even translated into German almost overnight and sent to Germany, which, by the way, since we're in the German-American state of Wisconsin, I want people to know that in 1848, after the German Revolution that failed, the working class, middle class revolution, democratic revolution failed, when German Americans started coming en masse to the United States, and they settled all over the Midwest, but especially here in Wisconsin, and also in the hill country of Texas, intellectuals and working class folk brought with them the belief that America would be the America of Thomas Paine. And here in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, from the 1850s right through to 1920, every year at Turner Hall in Milwaukee was held a Thomas Paine birthday ball around January 29th every year. And hundreds of people would turn out to dine, to dance, and to drink and salute and toast Thomas Paine. And then over in the central part of the state, in the Twin Cities of, I always get them wrong, Sauk City and Prairie du...
Prairie du Sac or Prairie du Chien?
What's the twin to Sauk City there?
I don't know. I don't live there anymore, Harvey. I'm in Ohio
now. Well, they set up a free church, an independent free church, which every year and to this day, I still believe on Thomas Paine, the closest Sunday to Thomas Paine's birthday, it's now a Unitarian Universalist church.
Makes sense.
They do a festival, a Thomas Paine festival, okay? This state for a while was, if in some ways, the voice of Thomas Paine in America back in the 19th century. But this was true in other cities as well. Okay, so why were they so afraid? So John Adams bought 3 copies of Common Sense as soon as it came out. 1 for himself, and he sent 2 to Abigail up in Quincy. That's where she was. And she was then to deliver one of them to a friend of theirs. And she was inspired by Common Sense to write the famous line, "Remember the ladies." What she said to John Adams was, if you folks think you're going to carry out a revolution without including the women, we're going to have to come down to Philadelphia and carry out a revolution of our own. Oh. That people have heard of, but they don't realize what Adams' response to it was. Adams, in many ways, did it affectionately. You can almost imagine they had that kind of relationship. But he was revealing the anxiety that Common Sense actually produced in the hearts and minds of all too many of the elite patriots. He said, not you too, the largest tribe of all, but we've heard that slaves in the Carolinas are threatening their masters, that students at the colleges are challenging their teachers, that artisans in the cities are demanding, you know, the point was that all over the place, and it was all true, they were getting these reports. When Common Sense hit America, as it, I mean, it was a powerful document, and he wrote it so everyone could understand it. There were hundreds of pamphlets, but only Paine's was written with the working folk of America in mind. And Adams was revealing his anxiety. In fact, there's a funny story. He goes to the barber, not for a haircut necessarily, but for a shave. That's what barbers really were about. And he's sitting in the barber's chair, and the barber, of course, has the blade. He's going to shave Adams' neck. And Adams says, "We're meeting tonight at the tavern. We're going to read Common Sense aloud." And you can, and always imagine, was Adams worried about the blade that was at his neck? Anyhow, Adams actually helped Paine get a job, a commission with the Continental Congress as the Secretary for Foreign Affairs. And as some people said, you know, what is the old expression? You keep
your friends
close and your enemies closer, something right. like that. Right? The point was, he wanted to make sure that Paine's powerful pen was used in a way that he could keep an eye on it. Well, Paine never allowed anyone to tell him what to write. That is the case.
Well, okay. So now, boy, you make me think of all these things as you're talking, Harvey. And I know Johnny's sitting there, you know, we have it. It's just like, oh my God. The foundation, though, too, and this is where John, back for public schools, though, and I do appreciate you saying it's like, yeah, he wrote for the common, whatever the common, the working class, you know, for me to understand, to feel power, to feel like, too, that he was saying you can make a difference. One of the things we talk a lot about at Busted Pencils, though, too, is to try to remind people of the public mission of public education. And I'm wondering if, you know, after all this we're talking about, if isn't that the reality that this idea of public education empowering, inspiring the masses, the common folk, the public sphere, is the attack on teaching and learning right now just another group of aristocrats saying, we don't want the people learning anything because, man, if they understand this stuff, they're going to be motivated to change the world. They're going to have the power to begin the world over again. And what Johnny was saying, and yes, that is public school in America. It is every day as a child. We are trying to inspire that child and that family, that community, that you can begin the world over again every day. That's the mission of public schools. I don't, you know, Harvey, maybe that's the attack. This is the same old attack it was on as Thomas Paine. We don't want to give people the ability of the democracy, the public, the space to be able to come together and lift up and do something about it.
Yeah, I promise you I'll return to Paine, but yeah. I got to tell you a quick story. I was giving a talk in my home state, well, my state of my childhood, New Jersey, in the Milburn Public Library. And there must have been like a couple hundred people that turned out. And on the wall before the talk, I noticed there was this newspaper article framed. And it was an article saying how this elite figure in the town of Milburn, this was at the public library, that had made an argument in the city council. Do not let this library be built. We don't want those kind of people to be able to read books. Okay. The point is that, look, the founders, whether they were elite or not, and I say that in the broadest sense of a founding generation, they understood if you were going to have a republic, especially a democratic republic, you had to have an educated citizenry. Otherwise, people's minds would literally not be able to think critically and knowledgeably to challenge the powerful. Monarchs, dictators, aristocrats, slave owners, the elites have always wanted an ignorant, and I don't use this word often, mass. That's what they want, okay? Education is to liberate, to lead out of ignorance, right? And as a consequence, develop the nation.
Well, there it is, Johnny Lupinacci.
Couldn't have said it better. I love that. It's like, absolutely. And you know, and what a gift it is to have you, Harvey, here with us, helping us not only to remember Thomas Paine, but to really resituate some of those phrases that are often put before us, but with sort of an empty action attached to it. Mm. And so it's really important, especially for us, Tim. And we work, we teach social studies. We teach teachers who are teaching social studies. We're in all the schools that we're in. And this is a critical moment where, you know, democracy as we know it, or as we conceptually know it and have studied it and have learned it's possible, is on life support. And one of the most important efforts we can all do, and it's nonpartisan, is to make sure education is empowering for all children, right? Because when they are learning about the importance of democracy, they're learning how to do democracy, and they're learning from the great people of the past who have emphasized its potential.
Wait, so Harvey, respond. Yeah.
The class and culture wars that began in the 1970s that we have been experiencing now for more than 45 right. years began as attacks on education in schools and universities. Okay, I won't go through all the documents and texts that were issued by elite organizations saying that we've got too much critical thinking taking place. We have too much humanities, history, and social studies stuff going on. They thus began the push to try to teach STEM alone. STEM is invaluable, but sure. the point is, if you're going to have a critical citizenry that will reject the prospect of dictatorship or monarchy, you must have educated citizens. And that began in the 70s. Look, you guys aren't quite my age. I got my PhD back in the 70s, and I can tell you that you could see it happening. You could see it in formal texts of, you know, books issued by the most elite figures in America, saying, "There, look, who'd they attack?" Or they call them the values-oriented professors. Who are those?
Before we go anywhere, because man, I'm getting fired up. But I also have been reading your book, so plug your book here, so our listeners can also get a copy of this and tell us a little bit more about that. And then that's going to take us up to break, Tim.
Yeah, Harvey.
Okay.
Where do I get the book? Everywhere.
Thomas Paine and the Promise of America. Okay, you can pick it up online at any of the good places. You can go into your local bookstore and they can get it for you. It is a major work. It's not an obscure text. Okay. But here's the other thing. I also did a young adult biography of Thomas Paine. So if you've got a teenager who you want to get thinking about these things, the book is called Thomas Paine, Firebrand of the Revolution. And for what it's worth, it won the New York Public Library Award for the best book for the teen age. So thank you for letting me plug those two titles. And if they want to reach me, I'm on Twitter.
You're at Harvey. Wait.
Oh, sorry.
Well, it's not Twitter, right?
Sorry.
Come on. It's X.
It's X.
It's X. Harvey K, our guest.
If I say it's X, it sounds like I'm saying it's sex, you know?
It's X. It's Twitter. It's Harvey K. Thomas Paine. Yeah, check him out. Look at all those things. It's Busted Pencils. It's Fully Leaded Education. When we get back, Johnny and Tim, me, we're going to do our best to break this down, make sense of this, bring it home. And again, Harvey, thank you so much for your time. Busted Pencils back after the break.
people must get done.
The memo says we gotta work to make the facts with the false charges. Pull the wool up in the eyes of the
filthy. Oh, busted pencils. Holy leaded education talk. We are dancing. I hope you're dancing out there. A little bit of anti-flag, rise against the music of Busted Pencils. It's out there. We got to put a soundtrack out there, Johnny. Fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Great guest. We just finished Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy and Justice Studies, Director of the Center for History and Social Change at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, talking about go out there, Thomas Paine and the Promise of America. Teachers, you heard him too. You know, he wrote a young person's biography too. Grab that, man. Let's bring Thomas Paine back. Because, Johnny, let think about this, you know, and I just started getting there. It's like, you know, we talk about this idea of what is the purpose of public education in America?
That's
you
right.
come
That's
back big... to that whole idea of what is the purpose? You know, people are like, oh, it's to give kids the skills to get a good. No. Yes, that happens. But the purpose, we've gone so far away from it now to the point. And maybe what Harvey's saying is, I think the fear of that purpose reemerging, maybe in the 60s and 70s, at least according to Harvey, is that the reason now we've had 40 years of a constant fight. And for you, like you said, you know, it's, you know, we might be on life support in this situation. Like, we are outlawing teaching truly truth, the reality, because I don't like that truth. Therefore, it makes me uncomfortable. Right. Yeah.
Historical consensus, teaching around what kind of facts, what things we know happened and we can learn from to do better tomorrow. This is like a fundamental, you know, core value of education everywhere, not indoctrination, where we're saying, how can we hide or withhold facts from people to manipulate or sway them in a particular way? So Tim, I mean, this is a really important conversation for listeners. We're looking forward to getting an extended podcast with Harvey. But on Busted Pencils, you know, Tim and I are both social studies teachers, so we have a bias. But, you know, we are also just citizens of a country, and we believe in democratic decision making, you know, and that the importance of local, politics, localized politics, decisions being made by those directly impacted by the decision. Right. That's nonpartisan. That's hard to dispute. That's also comes with responsibility. And with that responsibility is this is not anything goes in this decision making. And that's where education historically has been so integral in civilizations and societies. Didn't just start in 1776.
Right.
Didn't just own here in America, but it is a core value of decision making around the world for ages. And one of the things is, how do we learn to be a participant in our communities? How do we learn to participate in that decision making? And it's important work. And it's the work when we say, what is the purpose of education? You know, to me, it's the essential course. How do we practice, learn and practice to be the best we can at making decisions together in the interest of what, you know, even when we were reading about in Common Sense here, a common good, in the interest of, you know, the sustainability and in the living condition for everyone in our community. And so that's, to me, the importance of, you know, this education thing. We'll get into it more because, you know, Harvey brought it up, and I think it's important that, you know, the purpose of education was historically political. Yeah. It was an insurance policy taken out on democracy. How do we make sure that as we go forward as a nation, people are prepared to be democratic citizens? It took a hard shift, as Harvey mentioned, you know, into an economic purpose, to how do we train people mm-hmm. to be certain skilled enough to work in different professions and sort of swayed further away from that political. And there was hot debate over those two things. And I think, Tim, we're struggling because we shifted into a consumer purpose for education, to where it became less about politics, less about economics, and more about consuming. How do we just make sure young people get through this system and buy a lot of stuff?
And you know, yeah,
back to it. But I mean, I love that we're getting back to common sense, to Thomas Paine. You know, I love that we return to that quote. End us on it tonight, Tim, because I think the quote you started us on is the magic words that I don't know anyone can dispute.
Right. I'm thinking about that. It's, as you said this, you know, when I think about the purpose of public education, and we talked about this with Harvey before he left, the last bit. But when I take the Payne quote, we have it in our power to begin the world over again, and recognize that as a teacher, every day when I walk into that classroom and I have those children, students, young adults, adults in front of me, that we in that moment have that opportunity to begin the world over again. And the reality of hearing that and feeling that, people always say, it's like, you guys are just complaining and criticizing. I'm like, no, this is the empowering part of why teaching is so wonderful. The reality that every day is the ability to build the world over again, to begin again, to start something new. To recognize that and to hold on to that is just something where I'm sitting there going, it's just, man, this is why I think conservatives, and you say nonpartisan, I'm not sure it's nonpartisan. It's, you know what? There's, whether it's partisan in the sense Democrats and Republicans, it's definitely, our new aristocracy, the wealthy in there. The idea, and you said, Johnny, at best, we want good consumers. Okay. Well, I tell you what, that's horrible. What a horrible outcome for education to be about preparing people to buy stuff. It's trying to remind me of, there's a Seth Godin, marketer extraordinaire, Purple Cow, made a comment. I remember him saying something like, it's like, we learn enough in school that our job is to buy enough stuff so that we could put it in a storage bin until we die. And the reality, like, that's consumerism. It's so hollow. It's so meaningless. It's so purposeless. And so thinking about, again, let's use another of Payne's quote, these are times that try men's souls, historical part of, it's men. These are times that try our souls. And I hear teachers, I hear that coming from people teaching who say, the teacher exodus, the leaving, the whole part of this is to recognize that their souls are tried every day because they're not, we're literally legislating the fact that as a teacher, no, you don't go into that classroom every day to begin the world over again. You don't. In fact, we're going to make that illegal. Your job is not to do that. And teachers, then, that sucking of the soul, these are times to try our souls. This is what we're seeing. That exodus of teachers, these are the times that try teacher souls. And the exodus, how do we bring our teachers and our friends back? And community members, you're out there. And my neighbor, you do not want this fleeing from our public schools. Busted pencils, fully leaded, education talk. See you next week.
Perfect. Want more Busted Pencils? Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils.
Did you know the Wisconsin State Fair is 172 years old? It still celebrates the industries important to our state's history, like agriculture. But every year, new attractions and items are added. This year, there's more than 100 new foods to try. So what do you think topped the culinary list last year? Flamin' Hot Cheetos Chicken on a Stick? Deep-fried Old Fashioned? Or Pino Pretzel Popper Brat? The answer's coming up. The Wisconsin State Fair didn't start in its current home of West Allis. The first was in Janesville along the Rock River, then moved to different locations the next 40 years. The original cream puff has been around almost as long, close to 400,000 are gobbled up every year. So which food was number one last year? It was the Pino Pretzel Popper Brat. It came out on top. The State Fair is a true slice of Wisconsin, and it runs through August 13th. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green
ABC
Bay.
ABC News, I'm